From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of May 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll explore the DPA, the Defense Production Act, some of its history and how it's being deployed in the agricultural sector during the COVID-19 crisis. And we'll discuss what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather and that cold weather that we'll experience tonight and where it might land across the Midwest. We'll do that with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, corn futures finished 3 higher at $3.19 in the May contract, July at $3.19 1/4, up 1 1/4. In September, $3.24 3/4, a penny and a half higher. December, $3.35 3/4, up 1 3/4. And next year's March corn up 2 cents today at $3.49. May soybeans 7 1/4 higher, $8.48 3/4 the settlement price. July at $8.50 1/2, up 6 1/4. And November beans at $8.55 1/2, up 7 1/4. Next year's January up 7 1/4 at $8.56 1/2 as well. Bean oil futures 29 cents higher, $26.23. The bean oil at $286.70, up $3.10. July wheat futures soft red at $5.22 down 1/2. The hard red July at $4.80, a penny and 1/4 lower. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the June at $94.65, up 67.5 cents. August up 25 cents at $100.20 per 100 pounds. And May feeder cattle were down $2.37 1/2 at $127.90. The August at $136.95, down $1.20. Lean hogs May contract down $1.50 at $67.30. June at $61.70, $2.20 lower for the afternoon. Crude oil up 71 cents a barrel. Ethanol futures 2 3/10 cents higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel up about 6 cents for the day. And gasoline, a penny and 0.8 cents higher. The Dow around 294 points higher. And the U.S. dollar is down 0.166. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, to discuss the marketplace with us. Hey, first off, Mike, thanks so much for joining us yesterday for our Commodity Week discussion. For those who want to hear that, along with Dan Zwicker and Jackie Vakes, you can find it online right now at willag.org, on many of these stations over the weekend, and right here on our home station this afternoon. We appreciate that. We had another up day in Chicago. What'd you make of the conditions?
Well, I wished it would have been a little bit more up, Todd. I'm not real nervous about it because we did make some new highs, a new 3-week high in the soybean. And the weekly corn chart did give us the first long-term buy signal on some of my indicators since back in December of last year. So about a 4 or 5 month period of time since we've had a buy signal in the weekly corn chart. And that was very nice. Long-term trend line violated. You know, we had two big things. One, we knew about the weekend weather, the freeze threat. I thought the November beans would probably do better than they did. I thought they should have been up maybe double what they were in terms of their highs, up more like 15 to 20 as opposed to 7 to 10. And I felt like that was because we do have an emergence issue and these temperatures are not really getting any warmer on the updated models. Maybe the area is shrinking a little bit in terms of how much potential damage on the noonday maps, but the temperatures themselves are still stuck down around 25, 26, 27 degrees. And with clients of having anywhere from 15 to 30% of their beans emerged, I think that's a real issue after after Friday's close. I thought the trade would have reacted to that. The better thing that happened, I think, today that maybe will give us some added support after USDA's crop report was that the trade rep commented about progress being made with the Phase 1 trade deal in communications with China here just in the last 24 hours, it sounds like. And I think that pulls away and gets us away from more of a brink-type mindset of ratcheting up and going over the brink into some really tough talk and actually manifesting that into action by the Trump administration, something we very much need at this point. It's a very crucial point. It's as we said on Commodity Week, kind of, for me, it's crunch time for us to get our demand back and hold our demand and not have an issue with COVID later this summer again. And that in turn helping to push the Trump administration maybe into being more hardline with the trade negotiations again with China.
Yeah, so in fact, the head Chinese negotiator, along with Robert Lighthizer and Steve Mnuchin, all gathering on a phone call to talk about meeting those phase one trade agreement goals, and it appears they're all agreed that they want to try to meet them. I don't know whether they discussed anything further, but that's good news for agriculture moving forward. Have the Chinese been in the marketplace very much in the last couple of weeks?
The problem that I see, and probably what Mnuchin sees and Lighthizer see, is the issue with their currency, and they continue to make moves domestically in their central bank to weaken their currency. And so not only does that charge up their export market, obviously it also makes their buying power lower. So I think in terms of policy moves by the Chinese, they're not doing what they need to do, and the U.S. side probably sees that very, very bluntly. Having said that, they are very active in our markets. I think last week's pork export sales reported on Thursday morning was the largest of 2020. And so I think because of smaller crops that I'm looking forward to, at least on Tuesday's South American update by USDA, I think that helps us. But we need the Chinese currency to strengthen, because really not only does that help them buy more, but it also gives the market an idea that the emerging markets are not weaker. And this is especially crucial with Argentina just a hair away from defaulting on their peso and all of their sovereign debt. What we need is the Chinese currency to firm, and then I think what would follow through would be the Brazilian, the Turkish, and the Argentine and other currencies in the emerging markets firm up as well against the dollar. And I think that would make the Trump administration much more pleased.
You mentioned the Tuesday WASD, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, is due out from USDA. I guess from my perspective, the good news there is that nobody's looking forward to it. So hopefully it's all built into the, all built into the marketplace. At least I guess that's right.
That's a great way to look at it, Todd. You know, now I know why you get to do what you get to do, because I've never heard that until today. Now, I think, you know, we did the necessary technical damage almost 2 weeks ago. And I'm just hopeful that with all this new news coming out, the supply news with the freeze threat, the hard red wheat being in a very tough spot in terms of increasing drought this past week on the drought monitor, and not a lot of relief coming in the models if those are right, and other areas of the world that our competitors are tightening up. You know, the United Nations said to this week, and it didn't get a lot of press, but they said in their updated for 2020 crop year that other than China, wheat supplies are going to be the tightest since 2012, 2013. And so that really matches up with what you and I've talked about with global corn stocks to use ratios before the pandemic hit being the tightest since 2012, 2013 in the world. And so if you have wheat stocks outside of China in the same situation, that means there's a lot less competition from Europe and Australia and Argentina and the Black Sea. So these things are out there. We just got to get over this demand hump, and we're hoping that USDA's numbers are more what happened in the past. And if we get the trade negotiations back on track, the market will look to what the future could hold.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
That's Mike Susilo. He's with GlobalAnalytics.biz. Well, you may know that each Tuesday during the month of April, part of March, and now into May, I've been moderating a series of webinars called the Farm Doc Daily Live Coronavirus and Ag Series. Today, we took a look at some legalities regarding COVID-19 and how they've been put into place. They include force majeure, which we talk about occasionally here as it's related to commodity markets, and the DPA, the Defense Production Act. Harrison Pittman, who is at the University of Arkansas, joined us, and I thought it might be interesting for you to hear the history that he gave us of that act and how it's being deployed in this really small snippet of the webinar that took place this morning.
The Defense Production Act, just very quickly for some historical context, because I think that helps understand what it means or could mean or doesn't mean today. So we go back to 1950. You have in the White House at that time, we have President Harry Truman. We have exited victoriously from World War II. And in terms of the world, we have the atomic bomb, and we also have a lot of debt, and we're also in a post-war spirit. And so in terms of our overall policies, we had, particularly because of the atomic bomb capability, we were able to step back in some degree from military preparedness. And so we had kind of a step back in that regard. And then just a few short years later, the North Koreans crossed the 38th parallel and triggered what we now refer to as the Korean War. And so President Truman was in a situation that we had to mobilize very quickly. And so he goes back to Congress, and he asked for what's become the Defense Production Act. And these laws were predicated on two previous laws that were in the World War II era, but they had, you know, they were allowed to expire. And so that's kind of like a really high level sort of background. And this law, it delegates a tremendous, potentially tremendous amount of authority from the legislative branch and gives it to the executive branch, the president, who can then delegate various things to various department heads throughout the executive branch. And now, obviously, we're going to be focused on the Secretary of Agriculture. And it has to be renewed every few years simply because we have some check and balance between the two branches of government there. But here's some of the things that the act does. It gives, and this is sort of what it's most famous for, it gives the federal government priority in contracts and orders. In other words, it allows the government to step into the private sector and direct the private sector to say, you make, company A, you make blue widgets, and we now need those blue widgets in the name of national security. And so our contract that we're going to say that you must comply with takes priority over anybody else you've contracted with for those blue widgets. And then it has a ripple effect after that, depending on the situation. This is not a dormant law. It's particularly in the Department of Defense. It's kind of standard fare. It's used a lot, but frankly, it's not new with respect to the Department of Agriculture, but we're in a whole new world now with this pandemic. And so that changes the context around it. The DPA will allow the president under certain statutory provisions, and then there's some regulations that come with it we won't get into, to establish guaranteed loan programs, both for private institutions and private businesses. You know, just similar to what we know through the Small Business Administration and the Farm Service Agency, the loan programs there that are particularly important in livestock poultry industries. It broadly gives the president what is called appropriate incentives to develop, maintain, modernize, restore, and expand the productive capacities of domestic sources for materials. And I blocked out some of the language. There's quite a few other areas it covers, but materials is what matters the most in this executive order. And so in the interest of time, I boiled it down to just materials.
That was Harrison Pittman from the University of Arkansas. He joined us on the Farm Doc Daily Live Coronavirus and Ag webinar series this morning. You can hear the whole of that program online right now at willag.org. In fact, it is the 17th episode of that series. You can find all 17 episodes at willag.org. Let's check now the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Eric, thanks for taking the time with us. It's an interesting forecast, a worrisome forecast, too, as there's a lot of cold weather piling up. What can you tell me about it?
Well, Todd, as usual, there are a lot of moving pieces with this forecast, and the most important of those pieces right now to us in the eastern part of the Corn Belt is how cold it's going to be getting tomorrow morning. So what we have right now is a very, very deep trough in the jet stream that's parked right over basically the Great Lakes states up toward Hudson Bay. While the west is going to be seeing well above average temperatures, we're going to be setting some records here across this section of the country. Some of the cold records that we're going to be challenging here go back, in some cases, decades. Some of the records we might break in central Illinois. Maybe the last time we saw a freeze this late in the year was 1966. So I'm getting quite concerned about this. We have freeze warnings that are out for parts of Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and then all the way far south as Tennessee and Kentucky. And maybe on Sunday morning, parts of central North Carolina could get in on some of this below 32 degree weather. So this is a pretty rare and unprecedented event, and it's going to be causing some problems in the eastern part of the Corn Belt here. Now, change is coming. After this cold air comes blasting through over the weekend, we will start to see the pattern moderate, flatten out, and actually even completely change its trajectory. You see, right now we have northwest flow, which is why we keep seeing these little clipper systems that come from the north and west and cut through the state of Illinois. So we had one early this morning that hit right in through here, but got south of us. I only had about 0.2 inch of rain in my gauge this morning here in Mahomet. But we have another system I'm going to watch on Sunday. And by the way, that one might put down a little bit of snow in the Dakotas on its way toward us here in Illinois. But the change in that pattern happens after Tuesday and Wednesday, where now all of a sudden the upper level flow is out of the southwest. Now there's a couple of things about that. With that change, yes, we get the warmer temperatures. In fact, by the time we're talking next Friday, I'll have said, hey, the last couple of days have been in the 70s and the temperatures are really going to be warming up compared to what they are right now. But that is also going to open up the Gulf of Mexico and give favorable upper level flow to maybe increase our week two precipitation chances. So what does this mean? A return back over toward warmer temperatures, yes, but also return over toward more May-like severe weather. And May and June are typically thought of as the, for the midsection in the Midwest of the United States, to be our most active in terms of, you know, potent severe thunderstorms. So we're going to have to watch that up very carefully, because it appears as though windows are going to tighten up for the rest of this crop that we've got to get planted as we move into the, into the third week of the month of May. Now, go west of there. There's something I want everyone to be watching. If the pattern opens up and we get enough moisture transport to get back into the high plains, into the central plains, I'm talking about Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, that's critical. And here's why. Up until this point, we've now seen the drought monitor show an increase of drought into Colorado, into Kansas, into parts of Oklahoma, and then certainly western Texas. Now, we've been talking about this. This is one of our three things to be watching for the potential for hotter, drier summer conditions here in the state of Illinois. If that drought expands any more as we work through the month of May and into June, then we need to start to become more concerned about what that could potentially mean. What does it mean? It may help shove the jet stream farther north and therefore increase our risk of having, well, broader drought and potentially some more heat later on. Now, remember, though, over the next couple of weeks, if this pattern adjustment brings more thunderstorms and greater moisture to that area, we could erase some of that worry. And I'm just saying it right now as something to be watching, not necessarily a slam dunk in the forecast. But the good news is as we get past this time period with the pattern shifting, the good news is that this will be the last I think we're going to have to talk about these bitterly cold temperatures causing some problems for us, of course, for a while. Okay, when I think about overall what is happening internationally, I'm going to take you first to Europe. The cold snap we're dealing with, turns out much of the Black Sea region is going to be dealing with a cold snap of their own coming in the next 5 to 10 days. And we're going to watch that very, very carefully. In that Black Sea region, there has been some areas, I'm thinking specifically about the southern and eastern part of Ukraine and that area just to the east of there in the Russian wheat belt, that has missed out on some critical rainfall. And therefore, their soil moisture values are low and they're desperately calling for some rain and they need it. And unfortunately, the next 10 to 15 days in the forecast doesn't bring in the kind of rains that could relieve those problems. So we got something to be watching in the Black Sea area. While we're still in the Northern Hemisphere, I want to take you over to parts of Africa, Pakistan, and India. We recently got some more reports about the desert locusts and their swarms starting to move around again in that area. Specifically, I'm concerned about Pakistan, and what that might mean is that those desert locusts maybe get over into parts of India before the monsoonal rains come in. I want to keep an eye on that. It could become more of a newsworthy story about global ag markets as we press forward. But as we finish up the growing season down in South America, the concerns that we've been realizing now for the past month to 45 days has been primarily confined to southern Brazil, where we have had the drought pressures continue to increase. And as that famous kind of saying goes in times of drought, we say all signs fail in times of drought. What we're talking about there is that each time the model keeps predicting more rains for part of like southern Mato Grosso do Sul, or Rio Grande do Sul or Paraná, the rains don't really manifest the way that they normally do, and it's just too dry there. So we continue to see those problems. Now, northern Brazil's growing area, so think Mato Grosso and points to the east there, where we have a lot of our safrinha crop that's finishing. Well, in that particular area, the moisture has been better, and we do see, at least in the near term, more normal precipitation. Argentina, some of the early crop, of course, is being harvested right now under dry conditions, but those drier conditions could possibly kind of eat away on the yield potential of some of the later maturing crop. So those are some of the things I'm watching around the world, and it's certainly one of those things where one crop is finishing and another crop is beginning. We don't have, you know, the best picture being painted globally right now. So we got a lot to keep our eye on.
And I'm glad you're here to do that. That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Joins us each and every Friday on the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.